Rewind the dynamite from the most recent sight. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Welcome to Rewind to Dynamite. I'm John Pollock alongside Waiting, live from the estate of Ting Manor. Hello, Wei.
Ting Manor. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing superb.
Superb, okay. I believe it. I can buy it.
It's a nice shirt you're wearing.
Well, thank you. It is our post-wrestling Marvel tee.
Look at that.
Designed by Robert Pearson.
Where could I get one of those shirts?
You know, I believe there are still some shirts available at store.postwrestling.com.
Well, go check that out then. And you can look just like Wei. Complete. I mean, you're just you're a billboard here.
You know, all my shirts pretty much are from store.postwrestling.com. Even my socks, my boxers, we should start selling those probably. Yeah.
Whatever makes you feel comfortable. I think that is the key. Clearly, I mean, you're in a pandemic. You're in these clothes. You want to feel great about yourself. Clearly, we have been able to branch out into apparel. We are not... Wei, have you ever heard this one before? We're not just a wrestling site. We're a lifestyle brand.
Ooh. I hadn't heard it in a while, at least not in reference to us, but it does.
That seemed to be the big thing in the mid-2000s. Everyone was... No one was just one thing. It was, we're a lifestyle brand.
A lifestyle. Tap out. It's a lifestyle.
No, we're not about fighting. It's like, that's one thing we do. We're a lifestyle brand, bro.
Sure. Yeah, why not? You know, it does make me think, like, track pant sales, sweatpants, like, those sales must be through the roof over the past year. And conversely, I imagine, like, suit sales being way down. Like, formal wear, you know, you have no excuse to buy all that. But, like, lounge wear, I'm sure, like, that's through the roof now.
Still a lot of people working out there. So, I mean, I don't know if the suit sales have diminished, but maybe they could have. Yeah, I would definitely go with the former, that the sweatpants sales, you would think, have probably escalated greatly in 2020.
I'm guessing a lot of suit tops, but
true
pants, like, forget it. You're on Zoom. Oh, yeah. You can't see what I'm wearing right now, you know? So it's just like you just have to look good from the waist up. That's all.
Well, that was always the trick in any kind of... anyone like broadcasting. I mean, you just have to wear, you're at a desk. What does it matter? Mm-hmm. You have anything under there.
No, exactly.
Well, tonight we have lots to discuss. In addition to Dynamite, we're going to be taking people's feedback, which you can always leave at forum.postwrestling.com. And let's start off with the news, because I think there's some interesting things to get to tonight. The big item that was going to be, I guess, expanded upon was the thought on tonight's Dynamite, not really so much beyond the press release that went out today. And I think we should just go to said press release that AEW sent out today. Wrestling legend Paul White signs long-term deal with AEW. That is right, Wei. After all this time, Captain Insano is All Elite. As 2021 shapes up to be the year for AEW's biggest shows yet, today, the promotion announced that wrestling legend Paul White signed a long-term deal, adding yet another universally regarded name to AEW's roster of stars, legends, and upcoming talent. White will have an extensive role within AEW, and on top of his return to the ring, he will serve as a commentator on AEW's newest show, AEW Dark Elevation. Complementing Dark on Tuesdays, Dark Elevation will air on Mondays at 7 Eastern on AEW's YouTube channel and will showcase AEW's established and rising stars, as well as the top independent wrestlers in the industry competing against each other in the ring in pursuit of wins. It goes on. We have quotes here from Paul White and Tony Khan and ends it. Furthermore, Paul enters AEW as a licensed wrestler, and he's very much looking forward to studying our talent firsthand from the commentary desk in preparation for his return to the ring. So Paul White has joined AEW. I guess everyone's immediate question is if TNT can sub-license to AEW and he can be Go Big Show.
Yeah, I feel like they'll have a bit of trouble getting that one.
Do you think WWE has let Big Nasty lapse his original WWE moniker, which lasted all of two weeks. Big Nasty. Yeah,
I don't know if he'll be going after that one either.
You imagine his theme song had a been Big Nasty.
You know, would it have been that much worse than The Big Show? I mean, The Big Show is hardly a good name.
Yeah, but it's the doctrine that you can literally be named anything, and fans will just get used to you being called that. Like, honestly, Triple H.
No, it's ridiculous.
Look, it's H.
It's crazy. So, I mean, Paul White, Big, whatever you want to call him, like, I'm sure, you know, some form of giant, like, it's, everybody knows who the guy is. Enough people know him by name, but, you know, you talk about this Forbidden Door, I certainly did not expect this one. AEW really continuing to make a lot of, like, unique moves this year. Big Show, of course, you know, somebody who pretty much, like, felt like he was retired by this point. And if not retired, at least, you know, somebody who seemed like he would be a lifer in that company.
Especially with all of his out of the ring work. I mean, he was a big ambassador for the company, involved in their initiatives with the Special Olympics. We had the Netflix series that ultimately didn't get renewed, but that was a season, something that, you know, WWE was involved with. I was with you. Like, it seemed like Paul White was a guy that was probably just going to be connected to WWE, but, you know, as it came out, you know, his deal recently came up and AEW saw an opening to bring in Paul White. Now, the man is 49 years old, and I think we will see, like, I believe, like, Paul White, one thing you can say is that after that guy came back from, you know, all of his injuries and such, got himself into tremendous shape. And I don't doubt that he is one of those many talents that I think has a bit of a chip on their shoulder to come out and, you know, probably retire on their terms. I don't know how long of an in-ring run we're going to be looking at for Paul White. And I'm certain on the AEW side, like, this is a performer that has had a pretty good career, but I think was also a character that was just destroyed by booking that. I think there's some of that in Tony Khan of taking these reclamation projects and putting them into a different light for fans to say, look how they mishandled this performer and look what I saw in him. But I go back to what we talked about in December, and that was bringing in Sting. And we saw that initial buzz. And what I had said at the time was that there will come a time when numbers subside, and do they get into this game of suddenly several months later, you're looking at going back to the well and bringing in another big name that's going to get that curiosity initially. And I just don't want to see this company, like, overload themselves with these names. There will come a time in 4 or 5 months when you're looking, and if, say, another WWE legend becomes available, is that so enticing? So I think it's important to keep these roles very exclusive. Like, Sting, I'm fine with. There is that one, like, older legend that can wrestle occasionally, and now you're bringing in a second one with that kind of mindset. So I always kind of want to see how things are introduced, what kind of angle they have in store for him, and also what kind of job he's going to do on commentary, because that is not a role that he was exposed to all that often in WWE, and how that's going to translate for him, calling matches of talent you would think that he is going to have to learn about if you're talking about the vast independent wrestlers that are out there coming in for one shots.
Well, sure. Yeah. I would say they're still pretty well beneath the threshold of, I think, you know, having too many former WWE guys. I also feel like there must be some other motivation beyond just having maybe his presence being there in front of the camera for AEW. Certainly, we know that roster is incredibly young. They have a number of big guys that I think could learn a whole lot from, you know, his level of experience. I also feel like in recent years, we've seen him, Paul White, take a huge leap in terms of his, you know, acting ability, promo ability in front of the microphone, that I think AEW will make far better use of than WWE has.
I do too. I think he's going to surprise people that have just kind of, they've just become accustomed to this version of Big Show that we've, like, listen, he has been on your TV for 25, 26 years at this point, and has been largely in that similar role in WWE for 22 of those years. I do feel like he is going to surprise some people with his versatility outside of a WWE environment.
he's also, I think, somebody who is potentially will be a tremendous ambassador in the mainstream for the company. We've seen already, I think there are attempts to try to get Cody out there, to get people like Shaq coming in here to try to boost AEW's name value. They're at the stage right now where they're not so much in need of getting the hardcore fan base. They need to get your parents, people who, your friends who stopped watching wrestling but might remember somebody like a Big Show, people who watch NBA but don't necessarily watch wrestling. Big Show is a type of name who can make those TV appearances, get on talk shows, and hopefully promote your show to a different roster. Ultimately, I have a lot of faith in Tony Khan's booking that, somebody like Big Show is not going to just come in and overshadow, a Lance Archer or a Brian Cage to take those title shots and, take those main events away from him. I do ultimately hope that he is there to improve the name value of somebody like a Kenny Omega or a Lance Archer or even a Rey Fénix in the future. It's a really interesting and completely unpredictable move for AEW, but I'm curious to see what they do.
I think that's something that they want you to be in the habit of is being able to do things that are going to be a jolt to its fan base. That's going to, if there's any kind of a lull in your fandom, that they can do something like this, that's going to immediately grab you. And I think the timing of it was very smart, that this is going to, I thought it was a very smart move not to do some taped interview with Paul White and insert it tonight. Put all the eyes on next week. Next week is a big show. It's your go-home show for the pay-per-view. And you've got, I think everyone, the fact that you have Shaq and Big Show on the same show together, that will lead to people's curiosity right there. Do all this next week. You've got the initial buzz this week. I think people tuned in tonight seeing what more will they share. And really all you got tonight was the date of this new AEW Dark Elevation show, and his broadcast partner will be Tony Schiavone. So that's what was revealed tonight. Now, on the subject of AEW Dark Elevation, this will be their third weekly show that they're introducing. It will be starting Monday nights, March the 16th, I believe, is the date that they announced. And it will be airing Monday nights. So in the slot that they've been airing these women's tournament matches in, that will be their slot Mondays on YouTube.
I believe it is the 15th.
15th, okay.
Yeah, so this is not, as far as we know, the third hour that Tony Khan is referring to.
No, right. Tony Khan has said that is still coming.
I mean, it sounds like this is just, an extended version of AEW Dark, but placed on a different night.
That's kind of what it sounds like. They haven't really differentiated how this is different from Dark. It's going to feature, talent that are regular stars, rising stars, and will have independent talent. And I know that Tony Khan has said in public before the idea of potentially splitting Dark into two, which I don't know if that's what this is. It's kind of what it sounds like it is.
The fact that they're calling it AEW Dark suggests that it'll probably have the same caliber of talent, if not maybe even to a maybe lower degree than what you might see. Like, in order to get to AEW Dark, you now have to make it through AEW Dark Elevation, and then someday you'll make it onto Dynamite.
Maybe they'll be on a raised platform or something. It's going to be above
Cobo Hall. Perfect.
That would be the natural place to eventually take AEW Dark Evolution with, or Elevation with Paul White, yes, in a monster truck.
Oh, of course, you have to. Every match is a monster truck match.
So it's, as I mentioned, Tony Khan stated today that the additional hour of AEW on Turner Networks is still coming. And I guess this is obviously what the game is. It is producing content that you hope that you will find people that are going to spend money on your content. And that seems to be the strategy here. Whether this is taking, there have been complaints about the length of Dark, and maybe this alleviates some of that Dark goes from being a 2+ hour show most weeks, which I don't have the biggest issue with. It's, they have not hit you over the head that this is this must see show. And I think it is a cool outlet to put a lot of talent that you maybe have never gotten to see before on a broadcast. And you can take it from a 2+ hour show to maybe, 2 60-minute shows on back-to-back nights.
The fact that it's also Monday at 7 o'clock, clearly, obviously, trying to take advantage of that Raw audience as well, that's used to watching wrestling at a certain time. From the sounds of it, it sounds like AEW is, doing a lot of these matches, bringing a lot of talent in anyway. This might just be a better use of, splitting that dark wrestling, dark match footage over the course of two nights instead of just one. I'm curious to see how the Big Show will sound as a commentator. I'm also curious to see, as always, if they actually do any sort of real storylines in a show like this, or if it's just going to be match.
Mike Johnson at PW Insider reported that White's deal with WWE expired last month, and earlier this week had actually quietly moved to the alumni section of the website. And the last time we saw him on TV was that Legends Night, where I guess his send-off was getting verbally berated by Randy Orton, among the others. And yes, joined WWE back in February of 1999. That's an incredibly long stretch with that company. And you would have to think that Paul White is looking like to probably spend the rest of his at least active in-ring days with AEW. I cannot imagine him signing another contract after this that entails any in-ring work, given, well, given what his body has been through, what like surgeries he has had to come back from, that this is, I'm sure he's looking at this as the do your send-off matches and then have a longer role with AEW outside of the ring.
It's hard for me to see the WWE putting him in any sort of, in-ring capacity that would be extended, because they have so many other people. He's not as valuable to the WWE as he might be to an AEW. So this would probably be the best chance that he has of one last run.
And what a way to go out as the WrestleMania main event dark match headliner.
Perfect.
That aired 24 hours later.
Yeah, I'm sure that was weird. Did he not have a match after that? Like, did he not?
He did the stuff with Orton. They might have done a match on TV, which would have been his official send off. Obviously,
sure, very memorable. Technically, main evented Mania last year.
He technically main evented WrestleMania. Okay, he did several matches on TV after WrestleMania. He did a handicap match against Andrade and Angel Garza. Then he did a big six-man tag, and the final match was an unsanctioned match with Randy Orton on July 20th. That would have been his last official WWE match. So there you go. All right. Moving on to more story. Anything else on the Paul White front?
I think we wait to see what he says next week.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting part of next week's programming. So another story today, and this kind of goes back to Monday night, what we had been discussing coming out of the weekend with Progress Wrestling. Today, Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful reported that Marty Scurll was backstage at a recent set of tapings for NJPW Strong in California. Following that report, Emily Pratt at Fanbyte reported through a source that Scurll was at the tapings on January the 22nd and even did an angle with Rocky Romero that has yet to air. Of course, ROH and Marty Scurll, they parted ways earlier this year. This followed an investigation after Scurll had been named during the Speaking Out movement and with the allegations that Scurll was facing. And again, what I said on Monday is that, the story about Paul Robinson and now with Marty Scurll, again, these are going to be stories that are going to be continuing to happen. And I think anyone looking at the people named, Marty Scurll would have been at the top of that list of people that, there was no way that Marty Scurll was not going to have interest at some point. The question was when and what is the response going to be like? And, you're at a stage in the industry that's a very, it's a very difficult one to gauge fan interest beyond just what people are going to say online. Like, this is not a case of having to sell tickets and whether that's going to be a turnoff to people, if they're going to reject this, if a company feels that we bring him in and we just battle through the inevitable backlash we're going to receive, but people are eventually just going to be accepting of it. Again, it's very difficult when we don't have any kind of oversight here that comes down with some kind of ruling, with some kind of decision. It's left to the promoter of when is it okay to use these people and what kind of voice do we give to the fan base? This really comes down to fans and how they're going to react to this. And I go back again to like the Paul Robinson thing. And I think it very much was that outcry that at the very least led to Progress addressing things on Monday. And that was completely like online driven by people that demanded answers and then got them on Monday.
Certainly. Yeah. It's, you know, fans have the ability to speak with their social media and to speak with their wallets. Now, to me, it's like, this is a move that I kind of saw coming. You know, of all the options in the U.S., I feel technically, if you consider New Japan a U.S. territory at this point, he was most likely to be there, already has that prior association with them. I also feel like New Japan has kind of established sort of a reputation for not worrying so much about controversies such as these in the past. And, you know, if it was New Japan proper in Japan, I think he would already be there. But because it's the pandemic, he can't fly over. He has to work, apparently, these strong tapings. And I think it'll be really interesting to see New Japan US's response, because if it was just in Japan, I don't think they would care that much. But because this is now sort of a US-based company, I think they're subjected to a lot more American fan base reaction, and maybe they'll make a move as a result. Maybe they'll change things. Maybe they won't.
So I guess now it is, you know, based now that this is public, that this is known. I guess it just comes down to if New Japan has any cold feet about it, if they go ahead and run this angle as is, what their response is. That will be the next aspect of this story and where things go. But I would say, like, of everybody named, you know, Marty Scurll was going to be the one that was probably going to be among the first people that a promotion reaches out to. And it was just a question of who would be the one that would be willing to try this first. And it's going to come down based on what the response is like, because I think if it's one where it's not worth it to them, do they push the brakes on this? I guess that will be the next thing to watch. Raw ratings from Monday night. This was following the Elimination Chamber show. They did 1,890,000 viewers. They were number one on cable. They were up slightly, 4% in viewership, even in the demo, with a 0.57. In Canada, they did 246,500 viewers. That was also going against a Toronto Maple Leafs game. And one thing that's interesting, looking at the numbers this year for Raw, when it comes to overall viewership, you have one really strong number, and that was Legends Night, that did over 2.1 million viewers. You had one really bad number, which was 1.7 million viewers on February 8th. The rest of the shows this year, which is six episodes, all fall in the range of 1.8 million viewers, you know, and change. So it's like Raw has kind of found this consistency of overall viewership. They don't really spike that high. They don't really fall that low outside of those two outliers I cited. With the demo, I mean, you get a bit more fluctuation. Again, you throw out Legends Night, which was kind of the anomaly this year. And then you have kind of a high this year of a 0.60 and a low of a 0.49. And I think what we're seeing with Raw is that you are getting into more patterns. And it is the same patterns we've seen before. It comes down to what is the interest in the show. And for this week, what we learned was that, you know, the audience that tuned in, they stayed pretty consistent for 2 hours. Like, there was very little change from hour one to hour two. And then you had your usual third hour drop. And you're always going to get these third hour declines that are going to range in different levels. This week, the biggest loss was young males. They were down 20%. In the third hour, women 18 to 49 fell 15% in the third hour. So that's where we are at Raw. And Brandon Thurston actually did this really interesting analysis, kind of looking at whether the post pay-per-view bump is real or not. And looking, it's more so a factor of like your big pay-per-views, not so much the smaller ones. And this would be an indicator of that. Like, they were, again, in viewers and the demo, they were largely flat from last week. And that's coming off an event that wasn't just a pay-per-view, but also had a notable ending to it with The Miz winning the title. So going into WrestleMania season, I think that's kind of where you look at the booking of this. We talked about on Monday is that it seems that for so many performers, it's wide open where these programs are going. It's not a year where it's all these different programs that you can kind of forecast where everything's peaking and the storytelling has been building, Because I would think, like, your television audience, you would think that as things are starting to simmer with these feuds that have been in play for several weeks or even months, that the television viewership would start to peak. You're starting a lot of these programs from scratch beyond your biggest ones that even like a Reign's Edge, it's only starting now. So I think that's, you're trading in like the surprise factor of where is all this going to land versus paying off a lot of stories over the next 2 months to peak for the first, second week of April.
Mm-hmm. I'm sort of the opinion that, you know, the people that are left watching are the people that will always watch. And at this point, it's just about how much of the, I think we've been at the baseline for a long, long time. And it's just, you know, a baseline that's been dwindling and maybe has somewhat stopped during this period. I think the game now becomes how much more of the other hardcore fans that have lapsed at this point that you can get back for a WrestleMania season. I really don't know. I really don't know. Is Edge, Roman, you know, an enticing enough program? I certainly can't really say that about Drew and Bobby Lashley, especially if, you know, with The Miz attached to it all. And beyond that, like, what are your big programs that might get your casuals or your lapsed fans to come back?
Well, this year it's Bad Bunny. That's their tool to try and grab either new fans, lapsed fans, I think more so new and younger fans. That's the hope.
It's really difficult for me to see, you know, somebody who's, I don't know, 15, 16, however old a Bad Bunny fan might be, who is used to consuming Bad Bunny on Spotify, deciding Mondays, I'm going to carve out 3 hours to watch this wrestling show where he might appear for 5 minutes. I don't see how that translates. I think that same fan might, you know, give WrestleMania a chance on Peacock. If it's just $5, subscribe to this thing, you get The Office and you get to check out Bad Bunny doing this thing. But 3 hours on Raw every Monday, that's a really tough ask for anybody who's not a hardcore fan.
Well, that's going to be the test over the next month, is to see, and I do think it'll be sizable, and that is NBC's level of promotion for the launch on Peacock and then secondarily WrestleMania. Because I think you could get like a solid month of promotion. It's in NBC's interest. You are locked in long term with this company. It's your streaming platform that you are promoting, and what kind of synergy you see of WWE talent that appear on NBC's biggest promotional outlets to really sell you on Peacock and the WWE product.
So who's going on SNL next?
R-Truth.
Oh. I'm so surprised like somebody in the cast didn't win that title.
Maybe The Fiend and Alexa Bliss do a sketch on SNL.
Wow. Would it be the cold open or the ending?
Live from New York. Ugh, and he vomits.
Wow.
So
that'd be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a big 2 months for the WWE in terms of this this promotional push for both Peacock and WrestleMania. Up at postwrestling.com, I've got my news update today, including the history of head-to-head wrestling in Canada. Way, I got to write about the new VR today.
Oh, man. Anytime you can mention the new VR as part of your day, it's a good day. So great job with that, John. And great job again with your Big E interview that's up on the site right now. Talking about Our Heroes Rock. What's the update on that Kickstarter?
The goal for the campaign is 75,000 US. They've topped 40,000 already. It launched Monday morning. That's incredible.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
So, I mean, the post-wrestling bump is real.
It's all solely attributed to that, I'm sure.
In all seriousness, I really enjoyed that interview quite a lot with Big E. If you want to check out any of that, covered a lot of subjects that we've talked about over the past year, and really getting into his head about the impact that not just George Floyd, but a lot of stories, like he said last summer, changed his life in terms of his outlook on a lot of things. And what I really like about this project is the idea of taking that frustration, taking that anger and doing something, trying to just, whether it's big or small, I think when we look at a lot of these, we're very good at getting angry and we can see stuff that is wrong. And then it's the next step is always the toughest one. It's what do we do about this? What is the next step? And that's where I think people can get frustrated, because we revert back and then something happens again. And again, it's the frustration. It's the anger. It's finding big and small things to do that can hopefully make some kind of a change. And I it looks like this thing will likely get funded, and I think it's a really cool project that they are promoting. And that's also involving Andreas Hale, who we have had on the show in the past. But yes, you can go catch up on all of the news at postwrestling.com. And yeah, the story just looks at the history of wrestling going head-to-head in Canada, which happened far less than you would think just at a glance. There are some instances of it, but even when Raw and Impact went head-to-head in 2010, that's when Raw was on this 15-minute delay because the score did not air it live. It would have to start 15 minutes past the hour. So we didn't even have like a true head-to-head, even though both programs were running in Canada.
And we only had two, really, eventually three sports stations. Not like now when we have like 15, you know, sports stations, but there weren't really too many options for head-to-head battles like this to take place.
Well, think about the power that TSN had, and also like the limited options you speak of. The fact that TSN got Raw and Nitro at their peaks. Like
there was no Sportsnet. I mean, I guess the score might have been barely.
It was headline sports, but I mean, it was much, much, much smaller at that time. I mean, they were just like, they were highlights. It was far from what the score would become. And now Sportsnet 360 under Rogers' ownership, but yeah, TSN had Raw and Nitro at the peaks of those shows, but never did we get Nitro live here in this country. So anyway, that's the history of wrestling on TV in Canada. And tonight we had TSN2.
A lot of that stuff, but before that, I want to talk about some of the things on the site.
That's right.
A lot of stuff on the site this week, and I want to start off with talking a bit about our Rocky Balboa review from yesterday on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are closing up the Rocky Balboa in-ring career with our review of the sixth Rocky film, and in John Pollock's opinion, perhaps the greatest Rocky film ever made. We have an in-depth discussion with our friend Ed Boxler, who is a film critic and a movie maker himself, about this movie. I forgot how great this film was. It is excellent. Is it the best Rocky film? I'll let you decide. But we give our rankings as well. We talk a whole lot about everything that went into this. And you can enjoy that right now, along with all of our Rocky reviews at postwrestlingcafe.com. Later Friday, we have Rewind a SmackDown, live for all patrons at 10:15 p.m. Eastern, as always. This weekend, John and I will have a special New Japan Pro Wrestling Castle Attack post-show covering those shows happening for New Japan this weekend.
Oh, do you know when those shows are airing? It's awesome.
When?
Okay, the Saturday show that's like a super early morning start. It's like 4 a.m., I think. But the Sunday show airs midnight Eastern our time Saturday night.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I'm watching that one live.
You're not watching SNL this week. Without bad.
No, I won't be watching SNL. I will be watching. Okay. I'm going to watch Castle Attack live on Saturday night. So yeah, we'll have a show Sunday going through both shows.
In addition to that, WH Park and I will be joined by a very special guest for RewandaVision. Brent Chittenden is joining us. If you thought we got deep with the comics talk this past week, wait till I'm so looking forward to hearing these two together. Two of the most knowledgeable minds about comic books that I know. Brent, one of the, you know, smartest people when it comes to this type of stuff. So I look forward to the discussion. I'm just going to sit back and let them go.
That's exciting. Can I make a confession now at the mercy of my Twitter mentions I'm going to see tomorrow?
Yes, please.
I had no idea, not an inkling, not a hint that Elizabeth Olsen is the younger sister of the Olsen twin. Dude, blew my mind into a million pieces today. I had no clue.
You shouldn't feel that bad, John, and before your Twitter mentions get blown up. Like, in fact, this was like a Twitter trend. Like, I saw in my Twitter trends, like, part of the news feature, people freaking out about Elizabeth Olsen, finding out about Elizabeth Olsen's relationship to Mary-Kate and Ashley. I mean, I will say usually those people, I think, are a bit younger than you or I. But still, it's an easy mistake to make.
What are the Olsen twins up to now? Like, they have been completely leapfrogged here.
Oh, without a doubt. In terms of acting, in terms of Hollywood movie career, for sure. I think
Elizabeth Olsen is fantastic.
She is great. I think they're fashion designers or something. I don't know.
All right. Well,
they're not Avengers, that's for sure. So,
or yeah, will they? Oh, the other twins show up. That's going to be a mind fuck.
Damn. I think they should just tie Full House into MCU canon somehow. Uncle Jesse comes back.
Yeah, he analyzes Pietro's hair and
tries to break Lori Loughlin out of jail.
Yeah. The twins turn into Nikki and Alex. This could be the full-on adjustment. From who needs the mutants when you've got the Tanners and Laura Marr television coming your way?
We're folding all the multiverse universes in together anyway. Come on. It's all one family eventually.
Those are the crossovers I want to see.
Yep. So we're closing off February very strong here at the Post Wrestling Cafe. So you can join that at postwrestlingcafe.com. Also, our friends at Up Next have Deep Impact with Davey and Andrew talking about Impact last night. Shot in the Dark with John Cena released this afternoon. They'll have Up Next. They'll have BD Elite tomorrow on Thursday on their Twitch channel. And our friends in the British Wrestling Experience have Andrew is very busy this week. He'll also be joining Martin with the Wrestling Adventure as they're joined by Mike Murray. I just remembered.
I thought it was Neil.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mike Murray is another show. Our man, Neil.
You just scared Mike right now. He probably dropped his coffee. He's like, oh, crap. Did I agree to come on the show tomorrow?
They sound awfully similar if you've ever heard them in person. Our man, Neil, joins the British Wrestling Adventure. The Wrestling Adventure on the British Wrestling Experience feed. So you can listen to that Thursday.
Isn't that right, Neil? Are you going to be on the show? No way. I understand that you happen to think that I was Mike Murray, and I'm not.
Mike Murray is on some show. Like, we have a lot of shows, everybody. I apologize.
There's a lot out there, but a lot for people to take in. They love it. Okay. Postwrestling.com, schedule's up there. Tons of great stuff. Just more. That's what we've got for you. So look out for everything. Dynamite tonight. The first Canadian head-to-head battle. We had John Moxley and Ryan Nemeth starting things off. And Nemeth does a promo. He is going for the starring role tonight of the winner. He was not. Spoiler. Moxley annihilated him with crossfaces. Nemeth got in a drop kick. And then when he went for a neck breaker, Moxley turned it into a standing guillotine to pretty much put Nemeth out on his feet and then hit this prone body with the paradigm shift and win in 2 minutes and 43 seconds. Simple, good, effective match. And I kind of like the setup to the paradigm shift with the guillotine.
I really don't mind these, squash matches on the show at all. I'd much rather you give me a full show full of squash matches than a bunch of 50-50 matches with two guys that you aren't willing to have either lose, resulting in a bunch of DQ stupid finishes. This had the purpose of basically setting Moxley up for this big promo at the end. It's been several weeks now that we've seen Ryan Nemeth, and he takes a beating pretty well. I thought he made Moxley look pretty good, so I think there's a good chance they'll sign him.
Moxley sits down in the ring. He said he would do whatever it takes to get his title back, and he knows what he has to do. The images that come to mind for an explosive barbed wire death match include fire, blood, torture, agony, and vintage Japanese wrestling magazines. And Moxley says, I'm an addict for this. I like living so close to the flame, laying my soul bare in this ring each night. And I understand this might be a trap by Omega and his crew. Well, there's a long line of guys that have tried to put me out in the past. Everyone that has stuck by him will know when it's all said and done, I gave everything I had. And if it all comes to an end at Revolution, well, that'll be a hell of a way to go out. This was an awesome promo from John Moxley. I think he gets a lot of credit for his promos, but I don't think it's enough. I think this guy is among the best promos in the industry for his character, for this role. He is just the perfect voice for his character. It is just so clear that this is a guy that puts a lot of thought into this, and he has his motivations in his verbiage, and it just all clicks.
I have no doubt he puts a lot of thought into it, but the way it comes across makes it feel like it's so natural, and I could buy if he told me that much of this was improvised, because the man just seems to live this gimmick. It really does feel like it's an extension of who he truly is, and I think they're very lucky that they have a guy in him who just embodies this, like, tough guy, badass babyface so well. You can look over on the other shows and, you know, in wrestling's history, I think so often people try to fabricate a character like this and it just comes across really forced. I think Drew McIntyre is a really talented guy, very good promo, but in that system, like, he often does, you know, feel very scripted. Not to say, like, and like, Moxley doesn't at all. Not at all. It's, and I'm not even saying one's better than the other. I think they're both incredibly effective. But if I had to pick one that I felt more genuine, it's certainly Moxley. The man is, like, on top of the wrestling world right now. He's, you know, in the midst of a really busy week. Match against Kenta on Friday, which they did not plug on this show. No Kenta plug.
That's right. They didn't. Yeah, he's got a very big week, including he's going to be named the Wrestler of the Year for the Observer on Friday.
That's huge. Yeah, he's in between Bloodsport main events, and of course this Kenny Omega AEW main event coming up. So the man is just such a great leading man, and it's so clear from, like, him doing all of this stuff that his passion for the art of pro wrestling is very genuine, because it has to be for him to put his body through as much as he does. So I just hope he stays healthy through it all.
Excalibur explains that the ropes will be wrapped in barbed wire with landmines inside the ring.
That's what that match is. Yeah.
And then they ran a video, a history of Moxie and Omega, going all the way back to Moxie's debut at Double or Nothing 2019, and kind of how they have kept this story, you know, at different points and crossroads. Like, these two have always found their way back to each other, and this is being built up for the pay-per-view. Like, this is the end.
We saw a lot more video packages than usual on this edition of Dynamite. I mean, it was a taped edition of Dynamite, but they were spending a lot more of their on-air real estate on, you know, promoting using video. So
this felt as much like a go-home show as I'm sure next week's will. Like, this felt like the pay-per-view was this weekend. They were pushing the pay-per-view very hard. And what we said last week, they were hitting you hard. This is on Sunday. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Do you think, you know, because I've seen, like, what is it, some discussion about video packages taking away viewers. Do you think at this point they will see a significant drop because they aired video packages?
I think that there's times that you have to just bite the bullet and risk that. There's a pay-per-view, and that is the focus. So I think if, you know, you, AEW, I think, is also, I think, you're also at a part where some tune out is not going to debilitate them by any stretch. And I think there's times, like, when you're pushing the pay-per-view, you have to, you know, give that up, because you are trying to sell to your fans that are watching, that are on the fence about buying this pay-per-view, that you're really trying to do the hard sell with. So I think these last 2 weeks, you forfeit that prior thinking that might dictate outside of pay-per-view time.
It seems to be, like, why they have the Shaq match positioned the way that they do, to get as many eyeballs on their actual go-home show as possible.
Phoenix and Archer, this was an interview from last week where Archer said he's going to kick Phoenix's ass. Phoenix speaks, and it's translated that Archer was the worst partner he ever had, and they fought. This was a brutal setup to what was going to be a great match in the main event.
Really hokey setup for a brawl, like, just like local indie type of, like, you said what about me? Oh, I'm going to get you. Like, that type of thing. But I do like the fact that they use this Alex
Abrahantes
here to allow Phoenix to speak in Spanish. I think, you know, for somebody like Penta or anybody that they might bring in who doesn't really speak fluent English, like, he's perfect. Or, like, a translator who is actually doing in the interview is just the perfect way to do that. It seems so simple that I'm surprised it hasn't been done before.
The Young Bucks arrive with Mama and Papa Buck, and they walk up to a production truck that's got Matt and Nick's photos on the back. Papa Buck is so happy. He wants to take a picture with his sons in front of these photos. They take a picture. Papa Buck just says, "I'm so proud of you." I was like, this countdown to doom, I thought, was so good. I was like, you knew from the second he put his hands on Jericho last week, you knew all week, Papa Buck is fucked. And they were going to make you wait, but you knew this was coming. And it was, I thought Papa Buck was the star of this show to me, maybe outside of Phoenix. He was the best part of this show. He was great.
As soon as you see just a segment that just ends with a happy ending, you know it's not going to last.
Oh, not at all. The Varsity Blondes versus Brian Cage and Ricky Starks. Taz is on commentary. Starks trips over Pillman, flying to the floor. Cage and powerbombs Pillman into the post. They promote that tickets to the pay-per-view that's happening in 11 days, go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. Now, it's not a giant number that they're selling, but still, they're putting tickets on sale 9 days before the pay-per-view.
Could that be because they don't know what things might change last minute?
I don't know what's going to change. I mean, the show's going to happen. They've got, I guess.
I meant restrictions and all that, but in Florida, that's not likely to change all that much.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, hey, Governor DeSantis, we're thinking of running 80,000. Cool. I dare you to do 90. So tickets are on sale Friday at 10. So they're selling tickets for Wednesday and tickets for Sunday. And, it's a lot. I wonder what their response is going to be like for this pay-per-view. This one is like, is this enough to incent? In terms of like going out, so, like I have to imagine like it's pretty much a pretty loyal group that are going to a lot of these shows. Could you see people traveling like over state lines to go travel to this pay-per-view?
I can. Yeah. I mean, what's the ticket number? What's the ticket limit that they have?
Something like give or take a thousand is, roughly.
Yeah, like they'll have no problem moving that. And if, if somebody called in and managed to get tickets, I'm sure they'll be willing to make the drive at this point.
Garrison gets the tag. He just runs wild. He's just going all over the place, hit a tope to Cage, and then gets hoisted up for Pillman to hit a missile dropkick off the shoulders, but then Cage returns, drill claw, pinning Brian Pillman Jr.
I thought this was a good match. Each week I've become a bigger fan of the Varsity Blondes. They don't have the flashiest or the prettiest offense, but I think their energy is so strong. It's really there as just this kind of young babyface team. They're just a team that makes you want to cheer for them. And against a great heel team like Starks and Cage, I thought they complemented everybody really well. I think Starks and Cage complement each other really well, both in terms of charisma and in-ring style. So I'd love to see that team like pursue the tag titles eventually.
Yeah, I think Garrison, like what he's got is like that incredible energy that makes up for a lot of like inexperience that you can see. But it's... like, he's just wild. So I think that hell, and the long hair. I mean, a key. All young talent should have long hair. It's very beneficial. The lights go dark, and we get another classic Darby black and white video. I thought we were going back to, like, episode one of WandaVision here.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So there's a man with gloves behind the wheel of a truck, presumably Sting, that's driving the truck with the body bag attached to it. So somewhere in all of this, the truck was, I guess, overtaken by Sting. And we revealed Darby inside the body bag. And with that, Sting walks out into the arena, dragging the body bag, which we're all to presume has Darby inside. He reveals inside the body bag is Hook, leading to Taz's response: "What the hell kind of shit?"
You could say that on TNT, right? Yeah, we haven't had shit in a while.
You know what? Because during the week, I just think about how these guys should all be kind of unique from one another. That's my homework every week. I feel very strongly now. Taz should be the only person that is allowed to swear on AEW.
Oh, he said fuck too.
Well,
oh, wow.
I mean, the guy was in a body bag.
Oh, it's his son. I mean, yeah, I'd probably say a lot worse if it was my son. What the fuck kind of shit?
Then yeah. Sting points to the rafters, and there is Darby, who rappels down carrying a skateboard and lands in the ring, and he's hooked up to, like, the carabiner. So instead of like having to stop and unhook it, he's got the skateboard to attack Cage and Starks with. And this leads to Sting hitting a Scorpion Death Drop, and Taz watches on with Hook.
I still feel really uneasy about seeing any sort of ziplining inside a wrestling arena.
I do too. And it was, you know, WCW did continue it with Sting after Owen, but I think
it's just more about taste at this point and like conjuring up memories than I'm sure it's every,
like, you could see, like, they had like the carabiner, like, oh, they had it safely done, but yeah. It's what it draws you back to instantly, yeah, as a wrestling fan, that I'm not comfortable with it. And I wonder how many people, it kind of just takes the air out of whatever scene you're trying to achieve here. But I remember that was the response people had the first time Sting did it after. And Sting did it at Kemper Arena afterward. They just got back to doing it.
This is not that. And, like, you know, granted, like, I feel like Owen Hart is still very fresh on our minds, whether or not that's because of Dark Side or what. But it's still very fresh. And it's not going to be the same for everybody watching TNT. So a lot of people might not have cared. But I'm just speaking of my own personal experience, and I guess yours as well, John.
Oh, I think anyone that was around during that time, I would say anyone that's gone back. You're right. Like, Dark Side just came out a year ago on it, that you're instantly taken back to that, and you always will be, of any kind of repelling stunt in wrestling.
But in terms of danger, I mean, I am reminded that this is Darby Allin, who probably does far worse off camera each weekend by himself anyway. You know, Sting just, I enjoyed this week. It was a good follow-up to last week's tag.
Oh, this, they had like a real point to this whole segment. Like, this was, I think you could say, like, the most, you know, last week had the shock factor of the power bomb, but this one, like, this was just a great segment to set up this street fight.
Mm-hmm. Big return from Darby. Sting gets his revenge. So they really do drive home the fact that you are going to see Sting fully cleared wrestling at this pay-per-view.
Schiavone had a sit-down with Miro, Kip Sabian, and Penelope Ford, who said the best day of their life was ruined, the wedding, by Charles and Orange Cassidy. For whatever reason, this prevented them from going on their honeymoon. And Miro says he is going to destroy Orange Cassidy, who he called, and I quote, a walking Xanax. And when it came to Charles, he says Charles is a nice person. He did his chores, and I would invite him back to stay under my wing. Just don't follow Orange. And midway through, Tony is handed a note, and it's a multiple choice question of whether they will meet them, Taylor, Chuck Taylor, and Orange Cassidy at Revolution. Yes, no, maybe. Signed with hugs and kisses. Miro calls this childish. Charles is not a child. Do not associate with Orange Cassidy. I will teach you how to be a man. And with that, this man proceeded to put this note, scrunch it up, and place into his mouth.
No, that's what men do. Eat paper.
Miro teaching Chuck how to be a man with 5 weeks of vignettes, that I would be more interested in than what we got out of the Butler two-week phase.
I don't know if it'd be that much better, honestly, John. I mean, so this feud is continuing. We know it's going to end up with some sort of Orange Cassidy match, Chuck Taylor match, of course. But man, the story seems to be continuing in the same sort of, I guess, semi-comedic vein, that it just is just not working at all. Like,
very nice of you to say semi-comedic.
Certainly not enough to change my mind about any of it here. I try to be open-minded, you know, with what they have coming up, but I'm sure the match will be great. I just hope they get to it sooner than later, because I don't know if I can take more of these stories.
Well, they're doing the match at the pay-per-view. They did announce that.
Yeah, but then you have the Orange Cassidy one afterwards as well. Mm-hmm. So there's still some vignettes, I'm sure.
Brandon Cutler versus Jake Hager. They mentioned Hager is back to preparing for MMA. And Hager hit him with a bunch of wheelbarrow suplexes. And then Cutler gets on offense, sends Hager to the floor, hit a suicide dive, a tope con hero. This is Brandon Cutler getting everything in possible. He is then cut off, hit with a Hager bomb, and then Hager hits him with the goddamn stiffest lariat you have ever seen, and just sent this guy into the state of Alaska and pinned him in 3:13.
It was a rare walkout entrance for Cutler on Dynamite, and he came here to take a big clothesline, and he did that. I thought he did a good job.
Santana and Ortiz and Wardlow came in to attack Cutler, prompting the Young Bucks to come out and clear the ring. Hager avoided super kicks, and then Matt got onto the mic, Matt Jackson, to call out Jericho and MJF. Jericho's music starts, but then they're on the screen, and they're standing in front of the production truck where they took the photo, and they reveal Bloody Papa Buck as the Young Bucks run backstage, and Jericho and MJF take Papa Buck and wipe his blood onto both faces of Matt and Nick. Just the best visual. And Jericho tells him, come here and pick up your trash. And the two do the Young Bucks pose as the Young Bucks get there too late. And then Matt sprints after them in the car that takes off. And this leads to Papa Buck taken out on a stretcher. I thought this angle was great.
I enjoyed it too. I can't really say it was like, whoa, like I'm just, like, it's not really, I kind of looked at this the same as I would a BTE angle, and that like it never at any point scared me. It was just more like, oh, this is hilarious. It's the Young Bucks dad doused in like fake blood.
You're a sick man.
I mean, it just, it did not, it, the cartoonish selling perhaps from Papa Buck, like it was very cartoonish. Oh come God. On.
I was right.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, but I thought it was more funny than I would say scary. But it made its point. Where was Mama Buck at this point?
Maybe she was in catering. Maybe she was filming a bit.
Must be
maybe
good.
Maybe she was going after the championship, the BT championship.
You know what? That would be a great excuse.
Nick, this was noteworthy. Nick left in the stretcher with the Good Brothers while Matt stayed back.
Interesting.
Ross said, I am appalled and I'm furious. And Shivani said, Jericho and MJF, they aren't worth a damn.
You attack a man's parents? I mean, that's enough for a pay-per-view for sure.
The Bucks need to do like an impassioned promo next week. Matt Jackson, though, cannot do angry. That's not a good emotion for Matt Jackson. Like, the screaming Matt Jackson, he needs to be kind of more subdued and calculated, because, like even the yelling, calling out Jericho, like, it just very much feels like I'm cutting a pro wrestling promo delivery.
Or, like, you know, I'm fake angry. Like again, for BTE. Yeah, well, we'll see how he does. He's
going. I like the angle, though. I thought it was a good, simple angle.
He's going to have to dig into those emotions in a convincing way at some point. So if it's not after your dad was, you know, bloodied and beaten up, I don't know when you would get pissed off.
Maybe Matt Jackson is going to be so pissed next week, and he's going to rely on someone, a new mentor in the locker room. And an elder statesman can tell him, you know, Matt, I once had to deal with a man by the name of the Big Boss Man. You know what he did to my father? He took him for a ride in a casket, and I had to run after the casket. So you know what? I persevered, and you can too, Matt. Thanks, Paul. You know,
there's a lot of fun they could have with the Big Show's past life and plenty of references. The Big Show on BTE, I think, would be...
Big Show on BTE would be very funny.
Yes.
He could go review the Young Bucks. He's like, you guys kind of turned a lot of times during that whole FTR feud, didn't you? You guys need to be a little more consistent.
Yeah.
The best tweet I got today was someone saying that Big Show can come out of alternate tunnels each week.
Oh, he's earned
that,
right?
We at least can identify now. So I hope if this is a Tony Khan, like, I am going to show you how to properly book the Big Show. I hope he never turns. Like, that has to be part of the Big Show character. He never turns in AEW once.
I mean, well, first of all, his career is going to have to be long enough for him to make that point. I suppose, like, him not turning for a whole year would already be making that point. But, sure. Yeah.
We had a video for next week's tag match with Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill with Cody and Red Velvet. This was pretty much a road to segment, with comments from Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur. Got shots of Shaq cheering ringside. Tony and Excalibur are picking Cody and Velvet. Not Jim Ross. He's going with Shaq and Jade due to size. JR ain't giving Cody a shot here.
Gotta play devil's advocate.
Let's be realistic here. He's a big guy.
I thought Velvet's interview was pretty strong. Maybe the strongest of them all, because we haven't really had anything from Cody at all. Like, Cody's not really cut a strong promo at all.
I thought we were going to get something more this week. I mean, this video package was it. I imagine this is an extended, or this was a clip of an extended Road 2 piece that they'll probably put out maybe on Monday to push it with the promos. But you're right. Yeah, there was no presence of Cody on tonight's show beyond this. And maybe they feel that, you know, the goal should be getting Cody out there over the next week and promoting this elsewhere. And, you know, you've got your wrestling audience and now it's trying to get your outside promotion. But anyway, Isaiah Cassidy came out with Matt Hardy and TH2 to take on Hangman Page. I thought this was like a pretty, I think Hangman Page is maybe the most consistent like television wrestler going today. His matches are just, they always click. They always work. This guy always looks like a goddamn superstar by the end of it. They also mentioned here Omega and Brandon Cutler have an AEW Games announcement tomorrow night. We saw Hangman Page's arm get worked over for most of the match here. Page's buckshot Larry gets stopped when Hardy sends him into the post, and that leads to John Silver and Alex Reynolds coming out and leading to Hardy's ejection by Aubrey Edwards. Interesting tonight, especially given the fact that they were going up against wrestling competition every single time, and there were like four examples of this, that they would throw to picture-in-picture. TSN did not utilize picture-in-picture. Which
they never do for the tape shows.
Oh, is that the case? Okay. Mm-hmm. I had never noticed that pattern before. I just see like, yeah, because the live ones they do. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had thought it was more consistent.
I'm not sure why. Maybe it's just a technical thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought for tonight it would be one you would want to go out of your way to be able to utilize.
Do you think this war is actually something that TSN is invested in? Like, that they care so much about, like, Sportsnet potentially drawing a number of viewers away from them?
For wrestling? I don't know if it's their number one priority, but I think it's, like, it's another wrestling program, and it's something that they are invested in. I mean, it's, like, AEW does fine for the station. I would think it's probably not the top priority at TSN, but I would think it's at least on their radar.
Yeah.
I would think so, too.
Page snaps Cassidy's arm on the top rope. He's selling on the floor. Cassidy then stops a buckshot and is instead hit with a rolling elbow using the injured arm. He catches Cassidy with a DVD and a brainbuster, allowing Jim Ross to note that killer Carl Cox taught that move to Dick Murdoch. Cassidy comes back with a poison Rana, goes to the armbar on the injured arm, but Excalibur here criticizing his technique. He's like, oh, he's not familiar with this. His legs are all over the place. Page gets off the turnbuckle, the arm gets snapped on the top rope, and then Cassidy goes for a springboard off the middle rope. He's caught and hit with the deadeye, and Page wins. I thought, in particular, Page was great in this match, and this was like a lengthy singles match for Isaiah Cassidy.
Really good match, I thought. Very good chemistry between these two, and I totally agree. I think Isaiah, you know, like, again, no Mark Quinn, just like last week, so we got to see a pretty strong Isaiah Cassidy singles match. And I totally agree with your points about Page. He is so ready for that top role that he's just kind of making, they're just kind of making the audience beg for it at this point, which I think is the right reaction you want.
I think from the time they made that match with Jericho and Page for All Out, I think they knew long-term Page is this guy. And I know people were upset that Page lost that match. It was 100% the right call.
Mm-hmm.
It was very necessary to have Jericho establish that title and Page being this long-term project. And I mean, he feels like he's right on the cusp of that whenever they are ready to pull that trigger.
He needed to organically, I think, connect with the audience. And he hadn't yet by that point against Jericho. And he certainly has now.
I think they stumbled into that tag team with Omega and they just rode it out. And that turned out to be a great thing for him. I think working all those tag matches with all those guys and with Omega, I think that helped him greatly. Matt Hardy returns and he tells Page, you chose the Dark Order over Big Money Matt. So in turn, I am going to injure every member of the Dark Order. And he has Allen Angels, who he throws off the stage through the table at ringside. And all I could think is that if they were going to start this angle where Matt Hardy is going to take them out one by one, was there not a way that he could have been responsible for Anna Jay and her shoulder injury?
You know, that's a BT angle that maybe they can explain in retrospect somehow. But man, that would be very dastardly to take poor Anna Jay out of a wrestling tournament, you know, banana peel type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it would be heinous. Marvez, dude, this was right out of The Undertaker and Paul Bearer designing the coffin for Kamala as they come into Kenny Omega's woodshed and they are constructing the Moxley extermination chamber. And he's like welding the thing. And he just cut a promo on Marvez that he gets all the credit for ending John Moxley. It seems like every week they're just coming up with what environment can we put Kenny Omega in? He was in a classroom last week. This week he's going to be designing the extermination chamber.
He's a very interesting man.
He's got to be at a racetrack next week, like racing cars or something.
Right.
Like a big NASCAR track.
So they're promising some sort of like weird contraption that Kenny's going to be bringing into this match?
Yeah, that's what they're teasing here.
What do they call it? Like a Moxley chamber?
The Moxley extermination chamber.
So what would this be? Like an Iron Maiden type of deal?
Do you remember Stefan Urkel?
Of course.
Maybe this is what happens. He's going to throw him into this, and it's going to have the opposite effect. It's going to take him, and he's going to come out with a cowboy hat as Uncle Dean.
Wow.
He's going to be Dean. Back to 2015 Dean Ambrose. Like, no, yes. You've exterminated John Moxley. Bring back John Moxley.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Gas mask and all.
Oh, God, that would be hilarious. That's a BTE segment. They plugged the Bleacher Report special Sunday night, 7 p.m. We've got Thunder Rosa against Riho and Rio Mizunami against Yuka Sakazaki, and then a six-woman tag with Hikaru Shida, Mei Suruga, and Rin Katakura versus Emi Sakura, Veni, and Maki Ito. I watched the matches on Monday. All I will say, I did not end up catching last week, but this week's I did. There is absolutely no way you could argue that those matches in Japan could have aired on TNT. Like, there is no way. It was, no. I don't care, male, female, there is no way you could have put that setting on TNT.
You're talking about the production, not the in-ring quality.
Oh, yeah, the production, not the matches were actually very good on this week's show. I was impressed with just what they could get out of Aja Kong, who you can see at 50, like, it's just very limited these days of what they could get out of her. And you know, by the end, it was like they did the DQ finish, but I didn't feel it was, you know, like a cheap way out either. Like they gave you enough. But I thought both the Japanese matches were very good. Britt Baker had the, you know, impromptu match with Maddie Rankowski, who is, you know, it was like a shorter match. I wouldn't say it was like anything great.
I was not a fan of that match.
Like it just felt like it was, you know, Maddie Rankowski put into
the last minute thing. Yeah. Big spot for her. But I agree with you. Like, this is a fine, like, I think it's a great bonus to have. I love this concept of this international women's tournament and having a whole side of the bracket completely take place in Japan. To me, like, this is exactly what you want. You want, you know, a reason for people to tune in online. You're presenting it in very authentic fashion from that setting, complete with Japanese announcements and all. And then you take the winner of that side and put him into the proper Daily's Place environment to present to a wider audience.
You're the perfect person to call it. Like Excalibur is just so such good. A value to them to be able to just put him into place. He did have Taz this week, but they were like Excalibur is just born to call this stuff.
I think Big Show should be calling it the next year.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, I can't even like
it could be great. Like, joke, it could be amazing.
I have no idea. Like I have no recall of it. Like beyond where he's probably sat in for a match on Raw. Like I have no idea how he's going to be. I'm sure he's going to do his best, but it's like I have no expectation. Like I have no idea what to expect.
I think he's going to be great.
Hardy, that was the Hardy segment. Nyla Rose versus Britt Baker. This was the semifinal. The winner will take on the winner of Thunder Rosa and Riho. Baker gets frustrated early on, teases leaving, but then she comes back because it is a tournament match. Rose teases a cannonball senton into the corner the same way that she injured Baker's knee last year, and Rebel pulls Baker to safety away from the cannonball. Rebel got involved all throughout the match. She took a uranage onto the edge of the apron. Baker gets the glove and is stopped with a choke slam, and then Rebel is hit with the cannonball in the corner, so she takes it. Rose gets knocked into an exposed buckle after Baker had taken off the turnbuckle pad earlier on. She's setting up for the lockjaw, and the struggle for these lockjaw attempts. Rose would slam her free, then she'd use strikes to get free, and it was like Baker just could not lock on the lockjaw. And we got into several near falls, and this turned into, I thought, a hell of a match. I think Britt Baker, we have seen her grow significantly into like a really seasoned performer. There, it ends where Nyla Rose nails this right hook and hits the beast bomb, but she's injured and can't pin her right away, leading to Baker kicking out, and she gets up. Rose ducks a super kick, catches her with another beast bomb, and wins the match. This was definitely exceeded expectations. This turned into a very good match.
Yeah, I agree. I was
women have really turned it up in this tournament. Like, we got that great match last week. Yeah, I think it's like you have seen like this tournament, I think, bring out the best in this division.
I was surprised to learn that this was their first singles match, considering, you know, like they're probably two of the more high profile personalities in the entire division throughout their history. But I think because both characters are so well defined, this immediately made it feel like a bigger match in this tournament. And I did feel like, I think the Rebel stuff was too much at times, like her laying in the ring and the ref just kind of allowing it, that kind of took me out of it. But I thought the rest of it was really good. I especially loved Rose's struggle in that lockjaw. It was kind of cool to see like Nyla Rose play a babyface in a scenario like this.
Then they had a feature on Jurassic Express against FTR and Tully Blanchard next week. Jungle Boy said that FTR cheated to beat them in the summer. And then Marco Stunt says, they cut off the horns of Luchasaurus. Those horns brought back the beast. And they don't know what they've unleashed after they kidnapped Marco. FTR says that Tully is the engine that made the horsemen run. They had old still shots of Tully Blanchard and state that he has not appeared in a national wrestling ring since 1989. That is like ignoring a lot of matches this guy's had since 1989. Not to say this guy's had like a full-time schedule, but he hasn't been completely inactive in those 32 years either. I think maybe what they meant was...
He meant TV.
On national TV, I think was what they were trying to say.
Was Heroes of Wrestling not on national TV?
It was a pay-per-view. But he's done ECW. He did a WCW pay-per-view in there. I mean, he's done NWA stuff. I mean, he's... You know, he's had his matches in this this time. But I guess on national TV, that is the out here. That they are trying to explain. So that's next week, along with Shaq and Jade Cargill versus Cody and Red Velvet, Matt Hardy, Private Party, and TH2 against Dark Order, Stu Grayson, Evil Uno, John Silver, Alex Reynolds, and Five, Max Caster versus 10 in a qualifier for the Face of the Revolution ladder match, or should I say a clarifier match.
Yes.
The finals of the women's tournament. And Chris Jericho and MJF will have a press conference with the wrestling media.
I'd love to know who the wrestling media will be that'll show up. Probably PW Illustrated, or like, is that who they had last time?
They did this on for Brandon Cutler and what's his name?
They did something on TV too, didn't they?
Like when they were doing the Battle of the Losing Streaks with Peter Avalon and Brandon Cutler, they did the press conference with the wrestling media.
Okay.
And next week, Paul White will speak. And this is where they plug March 15th, AEW Dark Elevation with Paul White and Tony Schiavone. And Schiavone will be reunited with his pal Paul White from their WCW days.
The reunion we've all been waiting for.
Yeah. The reunion you didn't know was going to be happening.
It's Paul White.
Also for the pay-per-view, they have added a casino tag team battle royale with Butcher and the Blade, Silver and Reynolds, Uno and Grayson, Santana and Ortiz, Private Party, Top Flight, and Bear Country.
Bear Country, who we kind of saw get a bit of a call-up, I suppose, like in that battle royal last time, but haven't really seen on Dynamite since. So, you know, this might be something for them.
And Kip and Miro versus Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor for the pay-per-view. Main event, Lance Archer, Rey Fénix, winner is added to the ladder match at Revolution. And early on, Fénix hits this somersault dive through the ropes, clearing the guardrail and landing on his feet. This was amazing. Jake yanks Fénix off the top, so he falls down on the stage. Jake turns around to focus on Archer, and Fénix runs across the stage, leaps over Jake's head with a somersault off the stage, over the steps, onto Lance Archer.
Great looking spot. Very cool.
Man, there was like that that Evil Knievel stunt of, what was it called? That
Jump the Shark?
No, not Jump the Shark.
He jumped the snake here.
What was it? It was called, it was like Snake River Canyon or something like that.
Oh, okay.
This was a more impressive jump of a snake.
Yes.
I really tried hard for that one. I crashed and burned on that one. Archer's chopping him, sends him over the rail. After the break, Fénix is hit with a big inside out lariat on the edge of the apron. Shivani's going nuts. He's calling this a match of the year contender. There's a cannonball to Fénix into the rail, and then he avoids the blackout. Archer does the rope walk moonsault. Then Fénix does his own rope walk into a kick. This thing looked amazing. Then they did an overhead shot of the replay, which looked even better. He does the backwards rolling cutter. They tease a choke slam off the top. Fénix blocks, one man Spanish fly, and then Archer grabs at the mask, pounces Fénix, buckle bomb, choke slam. Fénix kicks out. The announcers are worried. They're like, time's about to expire. We're about to go. I was thinking, oh my God, we're a year and a half into Dynamite and we have never gotten a Tony Schiavone. We've got to go. I thought this was going to happen, but we didn't get it because right then on cue, Archer hits the blackout and he pins Fénix and he qualifies, joining Cody, Penta, and Scorpio Sky. I thought Fénix was going to be winning this one, but no, they're putting Archer, the big base, for the ladder match.
I thought that until they explained that if it went to a draw, both men would be disqualified. I thought this would have been a great way to get both of them in there by having them go.
Tony Khan said today or yesterday when he was on the Observer show, he said this will not be one of those cases where we sneak both guys in. He said one is going in and one will be out. So they did make it clear they were going to have one enter.
Well, I would have let that go for this one because I think both men would have been awesome.
I wanted both in too. That's what I said last week. I thought for sure these two would make perfect sense for it. What's interesting is we have four people in. They announced Max Caster and 10 for next week, but they have not announced how the sixth will qualify.
Interesting. Okay. Maybe the battle. Well, I guess you can't do the battle royal because it's a tag team battle royal. Yeah. This match was just awesome.
This was incredible.
Both of these two have really stood out lately in these multi-man matches, and that same specialness that they both have carried over in the singles match. Archer just works so well as a high-flying babyface. Ever since he made that turn, it's just like, his heel run was not bad, but I mean, he's next level right now as a lead babyface, so I hope they continue. And Fénix, just like week after week, continues to prove that he should be the top star in this company at this point. I mean, the promo thing, I guess, is something that they have to kind of deal with, but there's clearly an appetite for him to main event a lot more shows. In terms of in-ring skill level, there's really nobody on this roster that works like him, so he looked like one of the best in the world tonight.
I thought so too. I mean, the string of Dynamite main events have been through the roof this year. It's unbelievable when you look at the main events every week on Dynamite that more often than not are these absolute killers. This has been an incredible stretch. Like, it's a high bar now of what headlines a Dynamite show. So, yeah, phenomenal match that these two had. A pretty busy edition of Dynamite. Like, there was a lot. As I said, this felt like a go-home show in some ways, which I don't think was a bad thing. Like, they're putting a big push on this pay-per-view to make Revolution feel like a can't-miss show for everyone watching with the novelty of the main event stipulation, with just from top to bottom, like they're trying to make this as wide a variety of a card as possible.
You had some, you know, a great main event, but like in terms of storytelling, I think you had a great promo from Moxley. You had a big angle with the Bucks and Jericho and MJF and Papa Buck. And then a number of like, you know, a big angle, I guess, with Sting and Darby compared to some of the others. But I think like the addition of several of these video packages really kind of helped break up the show and really wrap these stories up in a nice way, especially in the case of like Shaq and Cody, which I think that build has been pretty disappointing. A video like what we saw today at least kind of gave you some sense of like what the actual story is. So I enjoyed Dynamite tonight.
Yeah, I think you look at what kind of publicity they get over the next week, but in terms of the actual show, I agree. It doesn't feel like a big match to me. The Shaq involvement. It seems like the idea of telling someone, hey, Shaq is wrestling next week, that is what they are relying on, because it's not like this deep-rooted story. It's not like this giant feud that's coming to a peak. It just feels like, hey, Shaq's gonna wrestle. I think if anything, it's almost like Paul White being on the show. It's like the tease of an angle that you wanted. Something is going to happen, and that's sort of what they are selling you on. But we'll see what happens over the next week. But just in terms of the television promotion, it's not like they really hit it out of the park tonight promoting this big celebrity match for next week.
I mean, you and I are very much, I would say, in the bubble, and I can definitely say the buzz isn't that strong within the bubble. Now, they're not really targeting the bubble, they're targeting the people outside of it. So I'd be curious to know, you know, your friends who simply watch basketball or watch whatever Shaquille O'Neal does, are they aware of this happening? You know, is this even remotely on their radar to the point that you might even consider it a big deal? I don't know. And the ratings will really tell the story by next Thursday.
I think they'll do a good number next week, but it's I'm very curious. I'm just curious to see what kind of how much of a full court press TNT puts on this match. Like, it's to their benefit. It would seem like this is your perfect, you know, synergy of your big program on Wednesday with your top franchise in, you know, your one of your key NBA figures. All right, let's go to some feedback tonight. The show gets an 8.67 from the forum. Nick kicks things off. I hadn't been fully sold on Sting in AEW until tonight. The vignette really suited him, and it felt big for him to finally dish out some of that signature offense. Darby will also have a highlight reel moment for life with the zipline. Otherwise, the purpose of this episode felt like it was meant to set the table for next week's go-home show and pay-per-view. I heard it's happening Sunday, March 7th, but the action was still very solid. With AEW announcing Dark Elevation and the reports regarding NXT Evolve, could an oversaturation of wrestling content become a concern? I think we're long past that. It's like, way that's past. that's the game. And like companies, when you're talking about what is potentially on the table, if you can sell these shows, it's worth the risk.
Yeah. You see the WWE playbook, and it's, there's never enough content. There's so much content out there that, like, man, I don't even know if John Cena is covering every single thing that's available on the WWE network, but like, AEW, I'm sure, you know, at this point they're taping a whole lot, and it, to me, I think this is just a way of them breaking Dark up in order to make both shows a bit more kind of appetizing, and who knows what sort of like future plans they might have to try to sell one of those brands. I would say this would not be the thing that would cause concern. I think the concern would have been had a while back. Let's go to Luxurious Flavor from Exeter, UK, who says, short and sweet between Mox and Little Ziggy. I felt and believed every word Mox said in his promo. I could listen to Moxley talk about how much he loves what he does forever and ever. The Jade Shaq segments were well produced and does well to showcase what little of a feud there is in a concise manner. I find it interesting that it includes JR choosing Shaq and Jade to win. Archer versus Phoenix was a decent main event. I thought Shivani's proclamation of Match of the Year contender in the opening minutes was bold. There's something not quite clicking with these 290-pounders like Cage and Archer when they face the smaller guys. Maybe I've been spoiled watching Dijakovic and Co. working a lot smoother with smaller talent over time. 7.5, Rogan-esque, ooh, commentary sells from Shivani out of 10. With Cena being on TBS's Total Wipeout, would TNT ever be able to promote the show during Dynamite? They run ads during breaks, but I'd be interested if WWE's trademark of Cena for wrestling purposes would supersede TNT's right to promote their own programming.
I don't see there would be any restriction to promote your own show.
Yeah. I'm like Cena, I mean, it's
the guy's name.
It's his name. He is now a figure that exists outside of just the WWE. So it, to me, it would be similar to like promoting Fast and the Furious, you know, which he will be in.
Kate writes, "This is one of the many times I feel like Dynamite has really built to a crescendo with the main event. I hadn't thought of Archer versus Phoenix as a dream match, but they are just fantastic together, both as partners and opponents. After weeks of increasingly cringy Sting appearances, I thought they upped the ante nicely with the powerbomb last week, and tonight was the best use of the icon since his debut. Knowing that he can take a hit and deliver some moves makes me more interested to see what they'll do in the street fight. My only issue with the show is the result of the Nyla Rose Britt Baker match. I thought the match itself was very good, but taking Britt out of the equation dampens my enthusiasm for the final at Revolution. We've already seen Sheeta beat both Nyla and Thunder Rosa, and I don't feel like there's a really strong story that can be built between Sheeta and Riho, Ryo Mizunami, or Yuka Sakazaki, since they've all been presented as babyface personalities within AEW and or the tournament. I have confidence that the matches will be excellent, but I'm not sure about the narrative. That aside, though, the show is a lot of fun. Any night when I'm angry to hear that the main event is starting, because it means the show is almost over, has to be good.
So who do we have left in this thing?
We have Rio against Thunder Rosa. That's happening Sunday. The winner of that faces Nyla Rose. And then on the other side of the bracket, it is Ryu Mizunami versus Yuka Sakazaki.
Right. Okay.
And so the winner of that is appearing on next week's Dynamite to take on the American bracket winner.
What's your prediction?
I think Yuka Sakazaki faces, I'm guessing, Nyla Rose.
I feel it would be Nyla Rose, too. Because it seems like Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker might still be a thing. So Yuka Sakazaki, and do you think Yuka Sakazaki will be going up against Hikaru Shida? Can you see that? Or will they go back to Nyla Rose, which is a match that is pretty tired, I would say, at this point? I think it could be Yuka Sakazaki. I mean, if they make a big deal out of somebody coming over from Japan, having her beat Nyla Rose and then going on to face Hikaru Shida, and Shida doesn't have to lose the belt, but still, like, you have a big story, and I think Yuka Sakazaki is somebody that they probably wanted to push ever since she made her first appearance in AEW Dynamite, so I definitely wouldn't count her out.
I would lean towards Sakazaki. It's like it's more fresh. I'd like to see Rio like involved there too. I don't necessarily see, I mean, that is probably like your underdog story is Rio going against Nyla Rose, and I think maybe continuing that with the monster of Nyla Rose going to the final with Sakazaki, and then Sakazaki finally beats the giant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see what happens on Sunday. Let's go to Chris, finally, from Ottawa, who says, "The Inner Circle Young Bucks feud is the best use of a dopey-looking wrestling dad since Mr. Miz. The natural conclusion must be the Bucks calling in their family heavies, Uncle Buck."
Oh, God.
Peter Buck from REM.
Stop,
if there's one. If there's one thing AEW needs, it's more celebrities in their top programs. Speaking of which, you probably have already spoken to this at length, but could we finally see the conclusion of the Paul White Shaq thread? Surely Omega and Ibushi took inspiration from the patience that these two men have shown in order to slowly build this matchup. I can't wait to see the big nasty cost Shaq, the upcoming match, and the final chapter of the saga. Yeah, something tells me they won't be revisiting that so much. A bunch of other stuff happened, which leaves me with this final thought. Every episode of Dynamite I watch, I always seem to have fun. I can't say that about a lot of entertainment these days, let alone pro wrestling.
Well, then is it really entertainment? Deeper question.
You know, just because something tries to be entertaining, does that qualify as entertainment? I don't know.
That is true. Well, yeah. Thank you for all of the feedback.
Hey, thank you to Jake for buying a Marvel's t-shirt in the middle of us doing one of these shows right after we mentioned it, John.
That's
so.
Listen,
shout outs to Jake.
We weren't. We might have been born at night, but not last night. Okay, this is we are savvy marketers at our core.
It's a lifestyle, John.
It's a lifestyle, bro. The post lifestyle.
Yes. The post lifestyle.
Well, Wei, this is where we bid adieu. I hope you have a wonderful night, a wonderful Thursday. What are you going to do tomorrow?
Yeah, Thursday, you know what? Let me think. Maybe watch a movie.
Anything?
I'm going to the dentist, actually. That's what I'm doing.
Wow.
I'm doing that in the morning.
I've actually got to go to the dentist in 2 weeks as well.
Hey, you know what I'm doing? I'm going to be joining the Discord at 3 o'clock.
Are you going to meditate?
For the post-wrestling group meditation open discussion with Jordan Goodman and Lord of the Court Phil Chair Talk. I can't believe
that
I
sounds fun.
This earlier.
This is 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday in the post-wrestling Discord. Postwrestling.com/Discord. Phil and Jordan will be talking all about meditation and I suppose what it's done for their lives, a bit of an introduction to it. And I believe Jordan is even going to lead a group meditation as well. So it's something that is a really interesting kind of, you know, thread that we've kind of begun with the wellness policy here, getting to be able to talk about topics like that. I'm certainly looking forward to it. So hope you join them 3 o'clock tomorrow, postwrestling.com/Discord.
And the last thing, on Monday, Wei and I are going to be announcing a cool idea that we have come up with that we are going to be hosting. So Monday, we will make that announcement.
Oh, nice.
Tune in.
Drop
going to leave you on that cliffhanger. Okay, thanks to everyone that joined us live. We are here for our double-double ice cap and espresso patrons. 15 minutes after Raw, 15 minutes after Dynamite, and all patrons can watch Rewind to SmackDown Live. That is when we return Friday night, 10:15 Eastern. Always a fun show on Fridays when we open up the phone lines and hear from everybody. So that is when we will chat with you next. Have a wonderful Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all of the days of the week as we say goodbye.